Going to the gym can be discouraging, especially if you're putting in the work but barely seeing changes. But with Tonal, you can actually see your progress with every workout. Tonal provides the convenience of a full gym and the expertise of a personal trainer anytime at home with one sleek system. Designed to reduce your mental load, Tonal is the ultimate strength training system, helping you focus less on workout planning and more on getting results. No more second-guessing your technique. Tonal gives you real-time coaching cues to dial in your form and help you lift safely and effectively. After a quick assessment, Tonal sets the optimal weight for every move and adjusts in 1 pound increments as you get stronger, so you're always challenged. Tonal lets you choose from a variety of expert-led workouts, from strength to arrow hit to yoga and mobility to keep you coming back for more. For a limited time, go to Tonal.com to get $500 off your Tonal purchase, plus a free 4-year warranty. That's Tonal.com for $500 off, plus a free 4-year warranty. Tonal.com.
Welcome to the Nation Podcast, where we take you behind the scenes of our biggest stories with the journalists who wrote them. I'm D.D. Guttenplan, editor of the Nation. A family rushing a sick child to the hospital, a graduate student picked up on the street by plainclothes officers, a young Salvadoran man, uncharged and untried both in the U.S. and in his homeland. These are just a few of the people swept up in the Trump administration's mass deportation dragnet. With help from his government and the right-wing media, Donald Trump has labeled millions of undocumented workers terrorists and criminals, even invoking the 200-year-old Alien Enemies Act to target some immigrants with lawful status. And yet, Trump continues to fall short of his campaign promises, because carrying them out in full would risk disrupting American consumer comforts and business profits. For all its tough talk, the Trump administration continues to walk a line, stoking anti-immigrant sentiment to rally its base while keeping big business on its side. This contradiction is nothing new, not under Trump nor under past administrations. The failure of U.S. immigration policy is bipartisan. So how did Republicans manage to define the battlefield in 2024 while Democrats remained cautious or cowardly? And what's ahead as we enter one of the darkest periods for immigration in recent memory? Veteran journalist Ray Suarez is here to help unpack these questions. Ray is the author of several books, including Latino Americans, the 500-year legacy that shaped a nation, and We Are Home, Becoming American in the 21st Century. He's also been a broadcast host for Al Jazeera America and PBS NewsHour, and was the host of the nation's own Going for Broke podcast. Ray's editorial, Slowly Turning Up the Heat, appears in the June issue of The Nation. Ray, thank you for joining us, and welcome to The Nation Podcast.
It is a great pleasure to be with you, and a great pleasure to talk to your audience.
Fantastic. Well, let's start with where you start, which is this incredible roundup of people. So talk a little bit about some of the folks that have become household names and maybe some of those that haven't.
There have been really heartrending stories and very, very ordinary stories. They all have tremendous human impact. If you're a restaurant worker in D.C., there were sweeps over the weekend right here in my neighborhood in Washington. You're not going to make the kind of headlines that some of these other cases have. The young graduate student, Rumeysa Ozturk, in the Boston area, the video is shocking for an American to watch as officers in plain clothes approach from three different directions, don't bother to show any ID or announce any charge. They just sort of hustle her away. What are we doing here? There was a case of a family down on the border. Their daughter, an American citizen, is routinely receiving treatment at a hospital in the Rio Grande Valley. And they were coming from their home in Mexico to bring the daughter for emergency treatment. The hospital was expecting her imminent arrival. And the family, the whole family, was turned back at the border. And this girl, suffering from a rare disease, could not receive her treatment. By now, everybody's heard the name Kilmar Abrego Garcia. There are probably lots of Kilmars, and there will be more of them before this is over. People who were quietly working away in communities across the country, who were here under various forms of compassionate parole, humanitarian leave, in the middle of the lengthy and Byzantine process of getting legal, and are being swept up instead. Some lured into ICE offices by the ruse of an imminent immigration interview. I mean, what could be more cruel than that? Inviting someone to come for their interview for remaining in the country, and that's just a trick to get them to appear so you can arrest them. We are starting small. The numbers are still quite small, much less than Obama was deporting at the height of his first term. But the Trump administration strategy seems to be see what the public will tolerate. A balls to the wall, troops all over the place kind of thing probably would lose public support. But this kind of thing, a couple here, a couple there, sweeps in one place, then sweeps in another, keeps it local, keeps the story local, and keeps the outrage local rather than national. And I think that's part of their MO.
Well, I think, yeah, I mean, you know, the phrase is overused, but this seems pretty clearly to be the thin end of the wedge. And also the softest targets. I mean, the girl in Texas is not a soft target. That's clearly a case of an inhumane policy that produced some bad publicity. But if you're picking up people who are laborers or people who have been advocates for Palestine, those are targets that are not going to bring massive numbers of people out into the street. And if you're picking up people who are not American citizens, but whose deportation is still contrary to the rule of law, and you get away with it. That's the thing with Trump, is you never know where it's going to stop. We know where it's starting, but we don't know where it's going to stop.
And what's scary is putting in jeopardy people who in their home countries might be in trouble, might get picked up by the police, might be charged with sedition. Who knows? They come to America. They come to America in many cases legally and then proceed to use the freedom of speech that's sort of in the air here to not only criticize their home country's policies, but sometimes criticize the United States as well. And that has now been defined as an infraction that can get you kicked out of the country, which is astonishing. It's new, and it's something that we never, as a people, necessarily approved or bought into. I mean, I don't remember being asked if it was okay if people with popular opinions could be just picked up and shipped home. They're talking about sending people to Libya. I mean, the black hole in El Salvador is bad enough. To send people to one of the most violent and disorderly places in the world as a way of making examples of them so more people won't come? I don't know. We're going to some strange and horrifying places.
And yet, as you point out in the piece, these are horrible things. And, you know, we need to speak up about them. We need to oppose them. But they're also well short of what Trump promised. In other words, he didn't promise to deport Americans. He didn't promise to deport people with unpopular opinions. Those are things that nobody got the chance to vote on. But he did promise to deport tens of millions of people, and they're not doing that either.
That would take the kind of mobilization that would almost certainly involve Congress, because the money can't simply be conjured up out of thin air. Even this supine Congress might defend the power of the purse. Even this prostrate House and Senate might say, no, we have to have buy-in on this thing. You can't just send the army and send the National Guard for the kinds of operations that you were talking about during the campaign and pay for it all on your own out of money that you conjure up from somewhere. So he might be stopping short, even with a guy who wants to be seen as a no-holds-barred tough guy like Tom Homan. we might be at a point where he's trying to see what he can get away with without involving Congress, without involving public debate, without involving a real moment of public involvement in what it is their government is doing. He's already losing support on his handling of immigration, and it was one of his strongest issues in last November's election.
Well, I want to go there in a minute, but you say something in the article that I think might surprise some people who have a narrow view of the nation's politics. And, you know, you're speaking for yourself, but you're also speaking for the magazine. You say every country on earth has a right to know who lives within its borders. Every country on earth has a right to maintain its frontiers and ask questions of those who like to cross. Every country on earth has the right to establish rules of entry and requirements for long-term residence. So your editorial is not starting from a position of open borders and let everybody come. It's starting from a position of some control over your borders is something that people have a right to expect their government to do. So how is a progressive view on borders different from a Trumpian view?
When I say that every country has that right, it to me, Don, it's one of the core definitions of sovereignty, is we're over here and they're over there. It's a world of nation states. Someplace up in upstate New York, near where my family lives, New York peters out and Canada begins, and there you're under Canadian law. And I think that that's got to be sort of a baseline. But the problem comes in, we haven't passed any significant legislation on immigration in just about 40 years, and the world has changed tremendously in those 40 years. The Cold War ended. New nations were created out of thin air all over the planet in those 40 years, and the world has been on the move. Tens of millions of people tonight will lay their head down in a place that is not their own homeland. And instead of the United States, one of the most powerful, supposedly best run, most democratic and wealthiest places on the planet, pretended that the world hasn't changed, that the 1986 Immigration Reform and Control Act could be standing law forever. And the world just isn't that 1986 second term Reagan, Simpson, Mazzoli, bipartisan legislation world anymore. We haven't kept up with the times. We haven't taken account of a world where millions of people are on the move at any one time. And to think that somehow we would escape this, that 25% of the entire population of Venezuela would leave the country and somehow it wouldn't involve us at all, that 15% of the population of Cuba would leave the country and we would just skate past and let other poorer, weaker sovereign countries take the whole brunt on their own. This was always a fantasy. So I say this was a bipartisan failure in part because our leaders never turned to us and said, this is the world. We have to respond in some way. Let's talk about it. Alejandro Mayorkas, when he was Secretary of Homeland Security, tried, but he got shouted down. The heckler's veto was put into place, and we never really had a national conversation on what we're going to do. Our law is complex. Our law is expensive. Our gears move slowly. A party with an interest in making sure those laws would move slowly by not approving the hiring of new immigration magistrates, by not approving the hiring of new enforcement agents. They want to keep the issue hot, so they use their power as members of Congress to throw sand in the gears. This is all that's gotten us all to today.
But this was something that we all knew in 2023, and we all saw in 2024. You know, we saw that there was this bipartisan bill that Kamala Harris supported, Joe Biden supported, the Republican leadership in Congress supported, and then Donald Trump vetoed because he didn't want a solution. He wanted a crisis that he could continue to run on. And yet, with all of that widely known, he still got a greater percentage of the Latino vote than he got in 2020 or 2016. So I guess a question I have watching this mess is there going to be a political cost? What do you think?
The political cost, it's like bleeding out slowly. The political cost will continue to be exacted as long as both parties pretend that this is something that you can handle by hustling people off the streets in ones and twos. We will never be able to come to some settlement on this until elected officials talk to us honestly. The United States has had a 100-foot-tall neon blinking sign that says, "Help Wanted," shining out to the rest of the world. We operate under the cynical rules that we can continue to run an economy with big help from people who aren't supposed to be in the country while still knitting our brows and making a sad face and saying, well, they're not supposed to be here, while they're milking our cows, while they're bussing our tables, while they're pulling wire in construction sites, in subdivisions outside Houston and Atlanta. We can't have it both ways.
Or while they're changing the diapers under our children and looking after our elderly parents.
You got it. And this is sort of, I mean, if it was unaware, if we were doing it unaware, you'd say, all right, then I guess the thing to do is tell people about it. But we're not doing it unaware. We know how much immigrant labor contributes just to the daily operation of this big, clanking, disorderly machinery of an economy. Whether you're paying for the ticket to exit a parking lot, checking your bags at an airport, getting your tables bussed, whatever it is you're up to today, it's a pretty good chance in many of the metropolitan areas in the country that you have had contact with an immigrant today, and also very likely, given their numbers in the economy, that you have had contact with an unauthorized or undocumented immigrant. And we have been dishonest with ourselves, we've been dishonest with the rest of the world, and our leaders have let us down.
Well, we know, you know, to be vulgar materialists here, which we can do at The Nation, that as long as you're undocumented, it's pretty hard to organize to demand a fair wage. It's pretty hard to join a union. It's pretty hard to exert any kind of economic democracy or any kind of power in the economy. So you would understand why a boss's party, which is what the Republican Party historically has been, would want to keep the lever of the lack of papers over a big sector of the American working class. But I guess I don't fully understand what's in it for the Democrats.
The Democrats have done a cowardly thing, which is they've treated this issue like kryptonite, afraid that they'll alienate people if they talk about it too honestly, either marginal Trump voters who are concerned about the level of illegal immigration, or Democratic voters who are very sympathetic to the plight of the undocumented. And they just figure if we don't talk about it or don't talk about it too much,
it'll go away.
We'll skate past it. I fault Kamala Harris for, during the fall campaign, now granted she had very little time to get up and running and underway, but their theory of the case was we will keep reminding people that Donald Trump exerted his Bedminster Mar-a-Lago veto from wherever he was golfing that weekend, so we didn't start to solve the problem. And that's the way we're going to talk to the country about immigration. And they allowed the Republicans to continue to press the crown of thorns of the totally mythical open borders around their brow. And I guess since they never defended themselves, they deserve everything they got. There were never open borders. There are not open borders. There have not been open borders in this country for decades. I was just down at the border, and you should see the amazing earthworks and concrete walls and steel barriers and razor wire and heat-sensing cameras and motion-detecting equipment and border patrol everywhere. The border is very heavily defended, except in the places where it's most dangerous to cross. Our problem, and since the Democrats never fought back, they allowed the Republicans to define this issue for them and define the Democratic Party's approach. The problem was, at legal ports of entry, hundreds of thousands of people showing up, not sneaking across, not floating across, not trying to hide, and saying, here's my passport. Here's my government issue ID card. Here I am. Here's who I am. Here's where I'm from. I can't go back to my country. That's not an open border. That is a policy that needed some frank discussion, but the United States was following international law and allowed the Republican Party to demagogue it and really whimpered, never said a word in defense of themselves, or hardly did.
And they also allowed the Republicans to set the terms of the debate.
You bet.
I mean, you know, when you think that Harris's main response on immigration was to say, we're with the Republican Congress on how to deal with this.
We're going to enforce the law,
right,
is what she said. And okay, she was trying to lean into her prosecutor bona fides. I get that. But really, even as unhappy and disturbed and snarly a polity as ours was last year, might have been open to a more adult, more serious conversation about immigration. And the Republicans saw the spineless, muscleless response of the Democrats and went into handing out mass-produced signs that said mass deportation now to hold up and cheer at Trump rallies all through the campaign season.
Yeah, it was frightening. No, it was frightening to see those signs. And of course, you wonder how many of the people who hold up those signs realize that means, you know, your nurse, your person who works in your business, your colleague at work, your neighbor are going to start disappearing. Now, they may not be disappearing en masse. There may not be military scale million person roundups, but people are already disappearing. And also, people are already not coming in the same numbers, or at least the encounter numbers are way down.
Right. The border was absolutely deserted. Let me tell you, Don, it was really something. I was in Roma, Texas. I was in Rio Grande City, in Starr County, one of the poorest counties in America. I was in McAllen and Progreso, and very few people were coming across, trying to come across. The Border Patrol was kind of relieved that the app was taken down for people who were going to report at the border and say, I want to be let in. That's been taken down, one of the first acts of the Trump administration, which made their lives a lot easier. And they could focus more of their resources on drug interdiction and that kind of thing. But at the same time, there will also be fewer people showing up to work and fewer people showing up to school. There are a lot of school kids in those border counties who actually live in Mexico and come across the border legally every day because they're American citizens to go to public schools. There are a lot of legal workers in the Texas border counties who live in Mexico because the housing prices are lower there and they come in every day to go to work. They will start to not report as word of roundups and words of sweeps starts to get around. The big box retailers, well, they were still looking pretty busy. I was in a shopping mall in Rio Grande City, and about one out of every three license plates was from Tamaulipas, the state just over the border. But if things get bad, I could see that slowing down as well.
So it sounds like what you're saying is that Trump's policy has solved a problem which didn't exist, which was the non-existent invasion, in that nobody looking at our border now and the total lack of activity could even conjure up the specter of an invasion. Of course, there wasn't an invasion before either. But what would an actual adult solution look like?
Well, we would have had to, you know, I have a feeling that many, many people, even people who think that they're following the issue kind of closely, don't realize that actually you don't have the right to counsel, for instance, when there is a hearing on whether you're going to be kicked out of the country or not. People who can afford counsel, people who have friends and relatives on this side of the border who can get somebody to hire a lawyer for them, will be represented when it comes down to a final hearing. But what Donald Trump is doing is prejudging cases, because both he and J.D. Vance have said, traveled the country and said in public, now they want to give all these millions of people hearings, and we can't do that. The problem's just too big, so we're going to just round people up and send them home. That kind of thing. Yeah, deport first and ask questions later. But if you're put in a place like CECOT, where you can't ask questions, in fact, it's an opaque place where you can't even find out if somebody is there, and they can't have some money in their prison kitty and go over to the phone and call you up and tell you how it's going. It is basically a black box that cannot be penetrated. So we can't know exactly, you know, until there was a proof of life with Kilmar Obrego Garcia, there were American legislators demanding to know whether he was even there. So they know this is irregular. They're going to test it. They're going to push everything into court. What an adult situation would be, for instance, if the United States government gave compassionate parole to Venezuelans and they filled up a hotel in Midtown Manhattan, a hotel where I worked my way through college, the Roosevelt Hotel. They wouldn't purposely not allow them to work, because men who are holed up in a hotel, have no place to go and no money, eventually do bad things. And, you know, I can't say for sure, and it would be, you know, hard to definitely ascribe ill motives to them. But I think they wouldn't have been too broken up if those guys started to commit crimes, so they could point to them and say, see, they're criminals. It's the creation of a pretext that then gives you leave to treat them however you want. We have to get away from that. We have to at least start from a baseline of giving some people, depending on their category. I mean, obviously, if you're picked up in the commission of a violent crime, you know, all bets are off. But a lot of these people are just, you know, just working their workaday lives in the niches of the economy. You have to give them a chance to explain themselves. And you can't treat them like international drug kingpins when, in fact, just a couple of months ago, they were here legally because of an act of the U.S. government. With strokes of the pen, Donald Trump created hundreds of thousands of illegal migrants in our society by unilaterally and suddenly canceling the temporary protected status of a lot of people. Well, they have to have a chance to answer. We have to talk honestly with our own citizens about the fact that the average undocumented person has been here more than 10 years. And someone who has lived in a community for more than 10 years is different from someone who just crossed the border on a tire inner tube this morning and you pick them up. They're a different kind of person. Their status in the community is different. Their likelihood that they live in a mixed status family is different. This is a complicated issue. And one of our governing parties, we have two governing parties, one of our two governing parties decided the best thing to do was to go real simple. And it might have been good politics because it won them an election, but it was lousy policy.
Where do you see this heading, Ray?
I think, well, I've been so wrong on this. I should confess. I thought that that when people saw, for instance, the video that came out the other day of a four-year-old kid having translator's headphones put on his head, pro se, in a magistrate's hearing, in a courtroom, a four-year-old speaking to a magistrate, having to represent himself, those kinds of images, people would eventually say, no, I don't know if cracking down means this, I don't think I want this. I thought that people being kicked out because they had bad opinions, I thought that we would have said whoa, whoa a lot earlier. But I think now that I'm I'm revising my first forecast, I would have to say that it's going to get a lot worse, and then Americans will finally say, no, no, I don't want this.
So there, you think it's going to keep pushing in this direction until they hit some kind of limit on by public opinion, but we're not near there yet, even if
right.
we wish
I mean,
we were.
You know, sending people, Britain, when Britain decided it was going to send its illegal arrivals to Rwanda, finally some people right. started to think, do I really want to do that? Do I really want to send somebody who's floated across from Calais to Rwanda as a way of deterring other would-be arrivals? And it never happened. It never came to pass.
Now the Rwandans are bidding to get Americans in the places that where they were going to put Britons. I mean, it's...
Boom, boom. I think we have unfortunately, we have a higher tolerance for cruelty, and also a lot of us are missing the shame gene. So there will be people being sent to Libya. Libya, a place where it's dangerous, it's out of control. There's not government control over much of the territory of the place. There's constant fighting. Sending people to a country like that, not something the United States does, you would have thought. But now it may be.
So, Ray, in addition to writing about this in The Nation, you also touch on this in your book. Do you want to say a little bit about that?
In my book, We Are Home, Becoming American in the 21st Century, I talk to immigrants, all kinds of people, people who snuck in, people who lived here illegally, people who came with regular old visas, people who came with their families, all kinds of people from all parts of the world, because I was trying to illustrate the impact that the 1965 Immigration and Nationality Act had on America. So there are Asians and Europeans and Africans and all kinds of people. What's the through line? They love this country. They're grateful that they were allowed to come here. Often you hear that immigrants are ungrateful and just want to hand out and all that. They have amazing stories to tell about how they found their footing here. They are living embodiments of a refutation for the tone of our immigration discourse in recent years, which has gotten badly off track and does not represent the aspirations, the hopes, the decency of millions of people who've come to this country.
All right. Ray Suarez, thank you very much. You can read Ray's editorial in the June issue of The Nation. Always a pleasure.
Good to talk to you. Thanks for having me.
Going to the gym can be discouraging, especially if you're putting in the work but barely seeing changes. But with Tonal, you can actually see your progress with every workout. Tonal provides the convenience of a full gym and the expertise of a personal trainer anytime at home with one sleek system. Designed to reduce your mental load, Tonal is the ultimate strength training system, helping you focus less on workout planning and more on getting results. No more second-guessing your technique. Tonal gives you real-time coaching cues to dial in your form and help you lift safely and effectively. After a quick assessment, Tonal sets the optimal weight for every move and adjusts in 1 pound increments as you get stronger, so you're always challenged. Tonal lets you choose from a variety of expert-led workouts, from strength to arrow hit to yoga and mobility to keep you coming back for more. For a limited time, go to Tonal.com to get $500 off your Tonal purchase, plus a free 4-year warranty. That's Tonal.com for $500 off, plus a free 4-year warranty. Tonal.com.